each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Winds of Change on a Wednesday afternoon. Father Tom Kors here once again. With the usual crowd.
Sorry, I forgot to close that door.
Yeah. Tony, they come and follow.
Right.
You, because they knew you were here today.
Yeah. they're here for you.
I want to say right off the bat, I want to thank the people who tuned into the show last week. A lot of people said they really appreciated the show for my brother, John. Going to miss him dearly, as anybody who's lost someone. Although, you know, we always use that word loss, but it's a euphemism for death and being the reality, the stark reality of it. Anyways, don't get me started or I might not be able to make it through the show, what have you. there were a lot of people at the beautiful funeral, too. This week, though, I'd like to get into the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe. If you celebrate the novena to Our Lady Guadalupe, we started last night, or Monday night.
I think it was Monday.
Yeah, Monday night, yeah, we got. And I'm sure a lot of people do. And here's what I'm going to say. There's a bunch of things on my mind, but we're doing it out in my parish, and I was a little nervous because we're doing it in English.
Oh.
And I know that means the crowds are not going to be that big, you know. And even the woman that's the impetus behind it, a wonderful Mexican woman, obviously bilingual, like so many of us are. She understood what I was saying when I said, well, let's do it bilingual or in English. We got to have a few songs in Spanish because you just can't sing Las Mañanitas in English. It just doesn't work. There's so many beautiful songs. It's a little nerve. I'm hoping that it will draw people into the love and devotion of this amazing miracle and the great power that Our Lady has. First starting for the conversion of the natives, so many of the native Indians in Mexico, if we can call them that, Aztecs, Mayans, and there's hundreds of tribes. But just like up in what is now the United States of America, there's hundreds of tribes. And not all the tribes in Mexico were against the conquistadores. That's one lesson that you kind of learn when Cortez came to the New World in the name of Spain. They were trying to find not only a way to India, but they were also trying to find, make it rich. Mm-hmm. So certainly that's part of human history.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Indeed, the first of many, I think, will happen.
That's early, too.
Yeah. But Tony, have you read much of the conquistadores, you know, and they call it the conquest of...
I've heard a little about it. I must confess,
not all the details.
Right, but I love the history part of it. I mean, I know the faith part of it, but...
Yeah, it's fascinating. And they intertwine, of course. Mm-hmm. Cortez could never have taken DFA. We'll just call it DFA or Mexico City. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it wasn't called that back in the 1500s. But he could never have taken it without the help of many of the tribes that the Aztecs and the Mayans were mortal enemies of. So it's interesting, as we celebrated, we meaning the Saint, my parish, St. James of the Sag, celebrated 185th anniversary, I put together a little historical presentation about Illinois and the parish going back to the Indian times. And Pontiac was an Indian chief. Everybody knows there's a city southern central Illinois, 2 hours, 3 hours south of here, whatever. Everybody, it's called Pontiac. Mm. Probably people think of it as there's a prison there. Mm. Well, anyways, it's a nice town. It is a nice town. There's a prison in Joliet. There's a prison in Chicago. Just about every city has its own prison.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's not get into that. But Pontiac gained fame because he united Indian tribes against the British that were settling and moving west, as it were, but also against other Indian tribes, too. Indian tribes were always trying to make alliances and treaties amongst themselves against a bigger tribe or an aggressive tribe. And so in Mexico, it was very similar. And as Cortez went from Veracruz to Mexico City, he collected a lot of tribes. And he only had 1,000 soldiers with him from Spain, but it was 10 or 20,000 or more Indians that joined him, because they were the ones who knew what was going on mm-hmm. with the human sacrifices. So that's a part of the story that needs to be kept alive. And because obviously when Mexicans get into the celebration of Our Lady Guadalupe, it ties into their indigenous customs and traditions, what have you. Mm-hmm. There's the dancing and there's the songs and all the rest. But that the tribalism, I'm going to say it this way. I also want to tie this show into a bit of some of a meditation on the Feast of Christ the King and the right way to think about nationalism. Nationalism is in the news a lot these days. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you hear it? Just let me throw this at you, Tony, because I'm glad to have you here today mm-hmm. and all. You're a great springboard or bouncing board,
yeah,
or whatever you call
good. Yeah,
some kind
good.
Of board.
Yeah.
No, you're not bored.
I've been called worse, but
yeah, springboard.
Oh, right.
And because just the phrase nationalism today, I'm going to ask you, does it seem to have a positive or a negative?
Very negative.
Very.
From watching the news.
Yeah, and it's primarily tied into what? I'm leading you, of course.
I'm thinking the racism and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's
well,
what
there. I think, but that certainly plays it. But isn't it tied into the fact that President Trump is saying put America first?
Right. Yeah. Since he's a racist, you know.
Yeah. if the president says let's put America first, and you don't like the president,
right.
You got to be against what he's for.
Exactly. So he's a racist and other things.
Yeah. And racism in contradistinction from nationalism. Let's think intellectually for a moment, okay?
Now you've just lost a lot of our...
Yeah.
Not our
listeners.
Right, but the people that are having this argument.
Exactly. You know, right. Realistically, rationally thinking, racism has a lot to do with people's ethnic backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Obviously, nationalism Nationalism, I'm going to say it this way. I could see nationalism as sort of an antidote to racism.
I would think too. But.
Because races are conflicting.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And especially, well, when we think of the word racism today, the first distinction is between black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because that's our, there's a great makeup. There is some, but it's nowhere near what is projected.
I believe that also.
Yeah, we made tremendous grounds, and we need to be grateful. And we don't have to kick a dead horse.
Nope.
You know?
Because he's dead.
You're not going to get him to move.
You know? Nope.
And it doesn't...
I don't know!
Yeah.
There you go.
So, but tribalism is also connected to racism, because tribalism is the extended family idea, you know? And the fact that both in Mexico and in the United States, Indian tribes were the norm. You hear of sometimes talks of the nation when tribes tried to join together an alliance. They did that up in the New York area. They did that out in the Rocky Mountain area at times. And that was the sense of a national identity.
Mm-hmm.
A national identity tries to unite fractured tribes. That's the meaning of the scriptural. That's the meaning of the Old Testament as well. And I get this from the great Scott Hahn, who was a wonderful convert and a great Catholic theologian today. He spelled it out so beautifully in his Covenant Theology series, where Moses became the father of a nation because he united the tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the spirit of nationalism is a step in human progress, not an obstacle to human mm-hmm. progress, you know. And I think that's what needs to be clarified today. Throw in a deeper, you can go beyond nationalism. And that's what I find so precious about Catholicism. And to be honest, why I enjoy Our Lady Guadalupe celebrations. Obviously, learning Spanish helps a lot,
mm-hmm.
and you can understand the prayers and sing songs and all the rest. And but as a Catholic, I don't want to think that my national identity is my ultimate identity, because there are other nations.
Right.
And I want my national identity to be high and deep and strong, but I want an identity that even goes beyond it. And being a Catholic provides that. And that's why I think the weakness in a lot of people's faith will sort of... put in their hearts a kind of a dislike, a distaste for a lot of these things. that the spirit of celebrating Our Lady Guadalupe, well, it can be a very uniting and powerful thing, because if it's rooted in the fullness of the Catholic faith. But here's the gist of the hour. In some ways, I think the celebrations of Our Lady Guadalupe have been hijacked a bit. And what do I mean by that? I mean, many really appreciate the celebration of Our Lady Guadalupe because it promotes nationalism in the Mexican's heart.
Mm.
And of course, if you're in Mexico, there's really no conflict.
Right.
There's no, nothing bad. You it's good from beginning to end, you know. That your love for our Blessed Mother, Jesus Christ, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, they're all wrapped together with your spirit of nationalism, all the better. But in the United States, if the celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe is primarily to highlight your nationalism, then you're missing the real meaning right. of this devotion. And that's a challenge to the many people that I know and love who have Mexican heritage and Mexican mm-hmm. blood. And I always used to say to my parishioners, half of my body is Mexican because it's just immersed in the culture. This is the way it feels. And there's so much good that I can see. But yet the problems in Mexico are such that they need God. They need the true God. They need the true faith to wake up. And enough, as I could say the same for the United States of America. The United States of America needs God. But that doesn't mean you poo-poo nationalism. It's just that, remember Jesus said, you can't serve both God and Mamma. You'll either hate the one mm-hmm. or you can't serve two masters. Remember when they asked Jesus about paying the taxes and he says, well, pay the taxes to Caesar. But you can't, your love of money and love of God become competitive. You can't serve two masters. You can have a master and an assistant master. You can have a president and a vice president. Hey. You can have a boss and a second in command. But when it comes to the ultimate, you can only have one. And so if your ultimate is God, you go one way, you live one way. If your ultimate is money, you go another way. Okay. Well, I want to come back to this and share more of this meditation is how the true devotion to the Blessed Mother, vis-a-vis the celebrations of the Feast of Our Lady Guadalupe, mm-hmm. Need this kind of deep understanding. So, a reform of sorts. Let's take a quick break. I'm Father Tom Coyes. This is listener-supported The Winds of Change. You're listening to WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then on Wednesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Sunday, December 9th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
On this 50th anniversary of Pope Paul VI's towering encyclical, Humanae Vitae, Father Coyes invites you to St. James of the Sag in Lamont to a multi-part series with Dr. Robert Lawler so you can gain an understanding of this document, which is as relevant today as it was 50 years ago, reinforcing Catholic teaching against artificial contraception and its resulting dangers. The series kicks off in SAG Hall at St. James of the SAG Friday, December 14th, immediately following 6 p.m. Mass. The topic? Humane Vitae as a Tsunami. Then, on the following Wednesdays, immediately following 7 p.m. Mass, on January 9th, 23rd, and February 6th, Parts 2, 3, and 4 will cover Building on Humane Vitae and the Theology of the Body and How We Are to Live Today. These topics will have discussion on the definitions of boy and girl, masculinity and femininity, husband and wife, and mother and father, and how these definitions have been obscured to create confusion over gender, marriage, sex, and the family. Plus, as an added bonus, Christopher West's 70-page book, Eclipse of the Body, will be available at no charge at the rectory. Historic St. James of the SAG is located at 10600 Archer Avenue, Lamont, Illinois.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. We're in the first full week of Advent, and that usually means for those with any kind of Mexican connections, the celebration of Our Lady Guadalupe, and many parishes have the novenas going on. A little reminder for those who may not celebrate Our Lady Guadalupe, Saturday's the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which is a holy day for us. Please try to find the Mass. It's sometimes difficult to squeeze it in here and there. But please do your best. Okay, so I threw out a little bombshell, Tony, before saying that that Our Lady Guadalupe can be celebrated poorly. And in a certain sense, it's been hijacked. And it's easier to see. It certainly happened, and it can and has happened in Mexico. But it sort of comes to light more here in the United States, because as part of the hijack is
that's
the way. The part of the hijack is to forget all the religious doctrine and the meaning of Catholicism, the meaning of having a mother in heaven, the meaning that divine intervention could happen, the meaning that we should all be united in a sense of family that goes beyond tribalism and even nationalism. But when Our Lady Guadalupe is almost completely a time of pride in Mexican national patriotic spirit. It presents a difficulty here in the United States, because your national patriotic love does have a reminiscent of the thought of Jesus that says you can't have two masters. You'll either hate the one and love the other, or love the one and hate the other. I say kind of, because it's not exactly. I think you can very much love God. Here in the United States, this United States is so unique in this regard. You're all supposed to love being American, but we're all supposed to love our heritage. And that doesn't happen in other countries, basically. As a matter of fact, looking at the history of Mexico, if you love your Mexican heritage, then you think of your ancestors. Well, you're either going to point to Spaniards or to the tribes,
right.
the tribes. And the history of Mexico since 1810, if you remember, 1810 was when Padre Hidalgo did his famous Grito de Dolores, you know, the cry of pain, the sorrow, started the Mexican Revolution. Ever since then... Well, the Spaniards were the bad guys at the beginning. And just like the British were the bad guys in the 13 colonies of the United States, you know, just the way it is. That's the way history played out. But there's a bit of a disingenuous, kind of fake news attitude when you read through the next 200 years of Mexican history that a lot of the people that were angry at those in power were constantly referring to the evil Spaniards, even though the last Spaniard to rule was in, I think, 1822. So basically about 10 or 12 years after the start of the revolution, in about 10 or 12 years, the Spaniard problem was stamped out. But yet the next 150 years, to it, there was the constant reminder that Spaniards are the bad, evil guys. And unless you cut your ties, and they did cut their ties. The presidents were picked that were native. Even the first Guadalupe Victorio and the first emperor Iturbides, they both were mixed blood Mexicans with Spaniard blood and Indian blood, and so that sense of national pride certainly is a good one when it holds people together. But within the, I'm trying to make a parallel here. It was strong national Mexican pride in the United States is a bit reminiscent of strong Spaniard pride in Mexico. And we saw history teaches us how that caused difficulties. Mm-hmm. And so I pray that our devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe will especially push us in the direction of deeper Catholic faith. And deeper Catholic faith necessarily, definitionally, should make us more internationally identifiable.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's what it's supposed to be. And so if the Mexican nationalistic pride is too deep or too harsh, or I don't know how to, it's very difficult to say, because without the Mexicans present in the United States, we would hardly ever hear or know about the miracle of Our Lady Guadalupe. We got to be thankful to the Mexicans who received this beautiful message, mm-hmm. and carry it in their hearts and keep it alive. And so it's a very tricky thing then to try to highlight and promote Our Lady Guadalupe in a American way. But actually that's what we're trying to do at St. James. We're having the prayers and the masses in English with some Spanish songs. Gotta have some sprinkle in some. And as a matter of fact, get this, Tony. Maybe, I don't know how I'll have to discuss this on the show, but okay, next Wednesday is the 12th of December, so I won't have it done yet, but in the evening on the 12th, we're planning to do the Mass of the Roses. Well, it'll be mixed with mostly English, a little mm-hmm. Spanish, even a little Polish, because there's so many people of the Polish culture that love the Blessed Mother and are mm-hmm. Appreciative of, are not afraid of some of the sort of the different language differences. By and large, most people in Europe have a little more tolerance to other languages than Americans do. It's just the way it is. But we're going to be singing America the Beautiful during the Mass of the Roses. And I'm really kind of curious how that's going to go.
See, that seems like a mix. See, you kind of lost me.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys that, again, in Spanish for me, I mean, that's the way I was exposed to it.
Right.
So I would never be one of those guys that says, hey, you know, I don't speak Spanish. Please put it in English for me, put it in Spanish for me, or put it in Polish for me. I experience it for what it is. And
it transcends?
Yeah.
You're trying to say the meaning transcends the language.
Because, and then I was thinking too, excuse me, when you think of, you know, Mexican pride and American pride, and I think, okay, I'm not here for that. I'm here for Our Lady.
Mm-hmm.
It is a beautiful experience. It's a beautiful story when it's told, and I've heard it, you know, so I know what's going on. I think the point is people need to understand what we're doing, and a lot of people don't.
Well, yeah.
You know, even Mexicans sometimes too, and I can understand that. It's Mexican pride, but it's above that. We're Catholics, and the stories of Our Lady, this is our mother.
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, it's good to have that exposure in a sense that you want to make it for everybody, but I don't know. I feel
it's good. Well, it's impossible to make it for I want to make it for the non-Spanish speaking Americans.
Yeah, and I can see that. Sometimes you have to bring people in that way, and I think that's the way to do it. But I mean, I think there's also a humility in experiencing it for what it is. That's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But not only, but knowing what it's about. And I think most people don't.
Yeah.
The morning prayers, it's a beautiful experience to experience it as it is and then learn more about why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, to know what it's about requires understanding.
Exactly.
Understanding needs some kind of a form of communicating wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And we, since we are incarnation, maybe in heaven we won't need languages.
And I think about that. I really do.
But do you?
Yeah. I mean, I wonder, because when we were talking about heaven that few times, I was thinking, well, I wonder if in heaven God looks and sees the Spanish, the English, whatever, but is it just a universal language?
I
mean, faith, I think, is a universal language.
Yeah, well,
to an extreme,
to
an extent.
It's a universal truth, but it's not a universal language. Mm. Nobody goes to take faith as their second language in college.
Nah. You know?
But it's a truth,
mm-hmm.
and truth is conveyed through words, which are part of a language. I think in heaven, we would know what other people are saying or thinking even.
Because we'd all be the same,
in
a sense.
Well, either we'll be the same or that we'll be able to understand all languages.
Right. Well, I'm taking liberties at what it might be that I don't know. It's like,
right, we're talking about a mystery, of course.
Right. This is the way I see it. I don't know.
But there's a little principle that Peter Kreff uses in that book that I frequently quote about everything you ever want to know about heaven. Is he said, if it's a genuine joy, something is generally good and beautiful here in this world, you can expect it in heaven. Why would God give us experiences of good and beautiful and joyful things here and not have them fulfilled in a deeper and more powerful way in heaven? That sort of fits the idea of marital relations in heaven. If people are married, you say, well, that's a good and beautiful thing we have here on earth. But then Jesus says in the gospel that in heaven they won't marry or take wives. They'll be like angels in heaven. You know, people read that in the gospels and say, well, wait a minute, then I don't know if I want to go there. And Peter Kreft has a way of getting around that too, because he says, well, the great joy of being with God will be so powerful that the joy of marital bonding, physical bonding, will be a little bit like, he uses this example, if a child of 4 years old were to perhaps ask their mother and father about marital relations, and the mother and father start trying to explain what intercourse is or something, to a young child like that, the young child would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then the mom or dad says, but here's a chocolate bar. And the child would then wake up and say, ooh, thank you. I'll take that chocolate bar, especially if it's his favorite candy bar, whatever. In other words, the intensity of the joy is of being with God in heaven will be such that the actual physical pleasure and joy of the marital union will be like a candy bar compared to a honeymoon. Once you understand the depth of human love and the joy that's associated with a honeymoon, when two people get married, they look forward to going on a honeymoon to be together, to share times like that. They don't look forward to sharing a candy bar.
So the kid wouldn't say, Ma, you just wrinkled my brain.
Right. It'd be, and that's kind of why parents, you don't want to talk so much talk to young children. Their brains aren't ready for that wrinkling. Right. And there's something about if you tell them the truth that you know that their minds are not ready for that truth. Right. And it's not going to come across as true or what you want it to
right.
be.
Right. Understandable.
And so there's the...
You just wrinkled my brain.
There's wrinkled my...
This happens all the time during this show. So everybody...
just be prepared.
Right.
So, but that's how Peter Kreft gets around the question of the joys that are in here and this world. What are they going to be like in heaven? Mm-hmm. So compare that to language. There's a certain joy in being able to speak well.
Right.
Or there's a certain joy in learning a new language. Or to second language, a third language, mm-hmm. a fourth language, you know? There's a certain joy. What is that joy in essence? It has a lot to do with the ability to communicate with those you couldn't communicate with. It's I'm able to express a thought that's sort of deep in my mind or in my heart, but I don't have the words for it. But how, some people are good with words and other people are not so good with words. And there's a certain joy of being good with words.
I guess there's also that feeling of, okay, you speak the language so you know me, you know what I'm doing. And I understand that.
Yeah.
It's almost like, when you think of like Latin in the church, nobody wants to think of that anymore, but it was universal. It made everybody, learn the same.
Yeah. Well, it was universal where it was taught.
Right.
Or where it was spoken.
Yeah. Right.
And that brings up, since we're on the topic, and this does relate, I'm on a crusade or a campaign to help establish English as the new Latin. And what I mean by that is Latin became the universal language of the church because the Roman Empire was the superpower of the world in which Christianity got its foothold. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to spread Christianity, you had to speak Latin to all corners of the Roman Empire. And therefore, Latin was adopted because obviously Jesus didn't speak Latin,
right.
and the early apostles didn't speak Latin. But Latin was part of the Roman Empire. Maybe Jesus did speak some Latin because the Roman Empire was around, obviously, mm-hmm. in Jesus' time. But most of the time he spoke Aramaic, of course. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the Roman Empire is no longer the dominant superpower of the world. What is? Here's us truly, the United mm-hmm. States of America. What is the dominant language around the world is English. And English can and should unite people. Here in the United States, it can. When I have people of mixed national ethnic backgrounds who love their native language, English will unite us more than Latin will. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding out the idea that English can really be the new Latin. And it should be because it's useful. Mm-hmm. Latin was good for the church for so many years because it was useful for propagating the faith. Now I'm afraid it's not useful for propagating the faith, but English can be mm-hmm. useful if it's used to propagate the faith. Oh, boy. I think we're a little overdue for a little break, and then we're going to come back. There's so much more things to cover, but God love you for tuning in, my friends. Hopefully we're wrinkling your brain. Stay tuned. I'm Father Tom Kois with Tony today, and you're listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. When did St. Nicholas begin delivering gifts on Christmas Eve? Well, sadly, by the end of the 18th century and the first part of the 19th century, people more and more forgot why we celebrate Christmas. So one day some folks invited me to deliver gifts on Christmas Eve instead of St. Nicholas Eve in early December. You can imagine my joy. The birthday of Jesus, what an honor! But it was then that they took away my bishop's vestments and dressed me like an elf. Talk about an extreme makeover! That's why on Christmas Eve of 1822, Dr. Clement Moore wrote down what he saw. He said he saw a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. Why, you ask, did he have doubts in his mind whether it was St. Nicholas or not? Well, he knew I was a bishop. He was shocked to see me dressed like an elf. But no matter how I'm dressed, my spirit is still the same. I'm filled with the joy that flows from the Christmas proclamation, Christ is born. Glorify him.
This is Bold Talk with Father Thomas Loyola.
We live in strange times, full of contradictions, many of which we create and then force upon ourselves. An example.
To hear the rest of this and other Bold Talks with Father Thomas Loya, visit taberlife.org and go to the main menu and click subscribe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. We're wrinkling your brain here, talking about Our Lady Guadalupe and a way that true devotion to the Blessed Mother leads to true celebration of Our Lady Guadalupe.
You just wrinkled my brain.
Yeah. Obviously, if you know, if you're devoted to the Blessed Mother, you've probably heard of St. Louis de Montfort. Mm-hmm. St. Louis de Montfort was a French priest, of course, and he wrote a book called True Devotion to the Blessed Mother. It's a classic. And in it, of course, he's trying to counteract false devotion to the Blessed Mother. Or I don't even know if you'd want to say false, but inadequate or twisted. And I'm saying that if celebration of Our Lady Guadalupe is only a celebration of Mexican national spirit, it's inadequate devotion because you're not catching the deeper side of it all. And Tony, over the break, you made reference to the virtue of humility as it plays. And that's unfortunately sorely lacking in a lot of people's hearts.
It's lacking in mine, but I'm learning.
Learning it. How does the virtue of humility help you celebrate Our Lady Guadalupe?
Well, like I said, the experience for me is so beautiful that I know I don't know the language very well, but yeah. I don't want to change anything about that. The experience for me going year after year has driven me to learn the songs. The songs are beautiful, and you know, albeit I don't know all the words, the beauty of the songs themselves is, and just the story of how this happened, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, it's just that to me is the experience. I don't want to change anything. I want to be humble in the experience.
Yeah. Well, and in that you could see the power that it converted the simple tribal indigenous people.
Yeah.
How that Mary often, the concept of the mother of God is uniquely Catholic. In the sense that, I suppose pagan religions could have incorporated the mother of Zeus, but that mother then would be another god who's equally or even more powerful. Or the idea that the pagan gods had sort of marital relations and children and all the rest is because it's a projection. They're human beings who are reflecting on their human experiences are assuming that the experience of God is like theirs. In Catholicism, you learn that, okay, we have our human experiences, but ain't nothing to what is God. You know, I like what again, Scott Hahn, one of the great theologians of today, he says, when we say our Father who art in heaven, the God that we're pointing to is more of a father than the husband of your mother, you know, or the one who gave you birth.
Right.
It's the biological man who gave birth to a child. That's the copy. We call the man who gave birth to a child father because he's reflecting the most real father, which is God. It's a very powerful way to think about God. You know, not that we're painting the picture of God according to our image, but God is creating us according to his image, which is very scriptural.
That's a good way of looking at it.
That way. So it's just a very deep. But getting back to this thing about the languages, as I say, I'm a little nervous about how it's going to be pulled off.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
We need a scorecard over here to see how many times do we wrinkle Nick's brain. Is that, we're going to be good. Anywho, I appreciate it. I'm a little nervous. I'm hoping to draw some people into the novena, even just praying the rosary for 9 days in a novena is a beautiful thing. And to sort of if the apparition of Mary and that Hilla Tepeyac in 1531 was a great thing, it could be seen by me, an American born in California, but mostly growing up here in the Chicagoland area, as like, I want some of that. Give me some of that. You can't have it all. If Mexicans overstate the nationalistic pride of it, they're in a somewhat sense saying, it's ours, you can't have it. Not necessarily, you know, obviously that's not what they want, but that's what it could be. It reminds me a little, when I went to Jerusalem and was outside the Wailing Wall, you know, where that's the only thing left of the Second Temple in Jerusalem. And I was with the neocatechumenal group, and one of the songs that we used to sing, and I'm sure they still do, is a Jewish song of one of the Psalms. And so one of the guys took out his guitar, and we started singing in Hebrew, a psalm by the, and I would have maybe thought that if I was a Jew standing there next to the Wailing Wall, I'd go, wow, look at those. They don't look Jewish. They're singing a psalm in Hebrew. To me, that would have been a, like, wow. Hey, wow, brother, throw your arm around me and sing together. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't what happened. What happened was some of the Jewish people got upset. They said, you're singing our songs. Don't do that.
Yep.
Isn't that weird?
Very weird.
Isn't that? And in a parallel way, in a certain sense, if you can only celebrate Guadalupe in Spanish, you're a little bit imitating that Jewish guy at the Wailing Wall, because you're saying, no, you can't honor that apparition in English. Mm-hmm. It's got to be done in Spanish. It's ours, and it doesn't belong to you. And if that spirit prevails, then you're counteracting the reason she came in the first place.
Yeah.
Because she came to unite all those different tribes, not only amongst the tribes, but with the Spanish. Okay, Nick wants us to take another quick little break. We shall do so, and there's so much more, obviously. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyes, and this is AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change invites you to Our Lady of Guadalupe celebration on Sunday, December 9th, from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. Then on Wednesday, December 12th, on the feast day of Our Lady of Guadalupe, starting early at 5 a.m., Mañanitas, the serenading of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Then, at 7 p.m., there will be a special Mass in honor of the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Following the Mass, the celebration will continue in the St. Stanislaus Kostka School Gym at 1255 North Noble Street. There will be a folklore and Aztec dance presentation, as well as the presentation of the story of the apparitions of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, of course, there'll be food for sale. Tamales, pozole, sopes, Mexican-style hot chocolate, and much, much more. The funds raised will benefit St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. That's Sunday, December 9th. St. Stan's is located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Join in our celebration of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, for our little final segment here. I'm going to throw you a curveball here, Tony, and okay, all my wonderful listeners. Somebody sent me a fairly humorous antidote about the culture wars that were, and I think we could relate this to the message of true devotion to the Blessed Mother and true devotion to Our Lady Guadalupe. But since it's wintertime, and we did have some snow, there's a little dialogue, a little thing about building a snowman.
Okay.
Maybe you've heard of this. I don't know if you've seen this one or not, but here's how it goes. At 8 a.m., I made a snowman. At 8:10, a feminist passed by and asked me why I didn't make a snow woman. So at 8:15, I made a snow woman. At 8:17, my feminist neighbor complained about the snow woman's voluptuous chest, saying it objectified snow women everywhere. So at 8:20, a gay couple living nearby threw a hissy fit and moaned it could have been two snowmen instead. 8:22, a transgender man, woman, person asked why I didn't just make one snow person with detachable parts. 8:25, the vegans at the end of the lane complained about the carrot nose, as veggies are food and are not to decorate snow figures. 8:28, I was being called a racist because the snow couple is white. 8:31, the Muslim gent across the road demanded the snow woman wear a burqa.
Okay.
8:40, the police arrived saying someone had been offended. 8:42, the feminist neighbor complained again that the broomstick of the snow woman needed to be removed because it depicted women in a domestic role. 8:43, the council equality officer arrived and threatened me with eviction. 8:45, TV news crew from ABC showed up. I was asked if I know the difference between snowmen and snow women. I replied, snowballs. And then I was called a racist. 9 o'clock, I was on the news as a suspected terrorist, racist, homophobe, sensibility offender, bent on stirring up trouble during difficult weather. 9:10, I was asked if I had any accomplices. My children were taken by social services. 9:29, far-left protesters, offended by everything, marched down the street demanding for me to be beheaded. And the moral of the story is, well, there is no moral because we have no morals anymore. And you can't make a moral of a story if society has destroyed morality itself.
This is 2018. That's how we live.
I'm sorry. That was a little crazy. But part of understanding our true devotion to the Blessed Mother, part of understanding true Catholicism, is the moral principles that go along with it.
Right.
One of the evidences that I think Our Lady of Guadalupe celebrations are not engendering the true effects that our Blessed Mother wants is the still constant problem with the right to abortion in the land. Too many people who might say they are completely devoted to the Blessed Mother in Our Lady of Guadalupe are also completely attached to a political lifestyle and a political party that is absolutely loyal to defending abortion as a human right, not as an offense against God. So it just seems to be what's around us. I don't know.
So it's sad.
It is. I don't know what to say. Yeah, it's just a twisted kind of. So our prayer has to be deep. It has to be humble. And we can be thankful that God trying to get our attention, my friends. And certainly the miracle of Guadalupe got a lot of people's attention, still draws our attention. But let's make sure we pay strict attention to the fullness of the faith. How's that a way for an ending?
Sounds good.
God love you, my friends. We'll see you next time. I'm Father Tom Coz. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thoughts. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. What's there to say when right from wrong has become so absurd? obscure. It does not take that long, can you see?